the production of energy very often comes at tremendous environmental cost. So this is 10 years after the oil boom starts in western Pennsylvania, and as a sort of symbol of what the deforestation, mud, and derrick-filled areas looked like. What is significant, I think, about this is the fact that the consumers of oil are not living here. So there is great environmental harm, but not at the places where consumers end up living. And part of what's going on, I am arguing in the book, is that the building of transport systems creates a physical dissociation between those who produce energy and have to live with the cost of that production and those consumers who use it and benefit from it. And there are, of course, a wide range of reasons we could think about for why Americans throughout their history have not argued for strong environmental laws to protect areas where energy is produced. But one thing I want to argue is we need to keep in mind the fact that there was very little incentive for the people who were actually using energy during this period to demand the types of changes that would protect these areas. And it's similar today. I mean, the Eastern Seaboard gets plenty of its coal power from coal mined in West Virginia, but you know, people in Manhattan aren't dealing with mountaintop removal. And similarly, you can find stories very much in our own current era where energy is produced separately from where it's used. It means that environmental harms are concentrated in places where users are not located. There also are material differences in transport infrastructure systems that help explain this. And so one of the features of a canal, and by the way, I should say some people get confused. A coal canal is not separate from a regular canal. I should say it's not. It's a canal designed primarily to carry coal. And I refer to these as coal canals because over 80% of their traffic was coal. But it's basically the canal. Canals are sophisticated technologies, but largely you can think about them as big ditches or rivers that you can go up and down. And there's no technological obstacle to drawing off points in between the sort of start and the end of a canal. And one of the things we see that happens in the coal regions is actually between where coal is mined and Philadelphia, New York at the end of the canals, there's actually quite substantial industrial buildup along the canals. A lot of towns along them benefit, develop quite profitable industries, and the distribution of benefits gets spread out. And this is partially because on a canal, you can pull over a boat at any point and deliver coal. Pipelines, and here's a picture of a pipeline over here, did not actually have places where oil could be drawn off in between the point where it started and the point where it ends. So if you live next to a pipeline, that didn't mean you were getting cheaper access to oil. It simply meant if the pipeline burst, and pipelines did burst, that your property would be damaged, but it wasn't going to give you cheaper access to oil. So there actually can even be there can be very specific design features that shape whether more people benefit. So now you may say, all right, renewable energy, we're talking about electricity transmission lines maybe. And electricity transmission lines can send energy multiple places, but they need transforming stations to step power up and down. And often these transformers are quite expensive. So if, say, we build a giant wind farm in the Great Plains area, it's not guaranteed that towns nearby will actually get that energy unless some of the design decisions are made to make that happen. So transport systems can not only shape where and when these energy transitions happen, but can also augment the who ends up benefiting from them. All right, so I've started doing this a little bit linking the past and present in my talk, but let me just mention three quick points about this, and I imagine in our discussion we'll talk about it more. So one point of the study for the present is, of course, transport infrastructure for renewable energy would be a good idea. As many people note, the places where the sun shines the brightest, that's what this map is, are not always the places where population ends up being clustered. And the same thing is certainly true for where the wind ends up blowing the hardest, that these are not the locations where people end up living. So if we want to expand renewable energy production, some level of new transmission infrastructure will be necessary, and it's important to think about. Google actually has been involved in a potentially interesting project. I don't know who's heard about the Atlantic, Have you heard of who's heard of the Atlantic Wind Connection? Google's involved in. Okay, only a couple of people. Google is actually one of the major sponsors of this idea of a major, this is the Eastern Seaboard between Virginia and New Jersey. And Google, it's proposed, Google's got about a 37% stake in the project with a couple other partners, a $5 billion offshore transmission line that would put offshore wind farms and transmit this power on the Eastern Seaboard.